everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thank you for being here. Let's get on into it. How are you? I hope you're well. I'm sitting here on a Saturday evening recording this, which is kind of weird. I'm much more of a morning person when I do most of my active, creative things. I have more energy and more gumption, more ability, it seems, more agency in one way or another. But I felt like sitting down and talking because an important idea came to mind. And I've been dealing with a lot of shit lately. I'm not even gonna lie. Childcare is a bitch. Daycare, institutionalized, children. It's something I've spoken about before on the show. It's difficult in this modern day era, especially as a single parent, to be able to get all the hats met of responsibility in our lives. And there's a lot of single parents out there, and that makes me know that I'm not the only one. It gives me peace of mind when I sit in my deep pitying emotionality. But I don't want to sit like that. I don't want to soak in just my plain old negativity. Tonight, I want to speak about fear. Fear is an elusive character. It's a subject that is hard to speak about because it's hard to feel. And in my country, the United States, we're taught to avoid fear. We're taught to ignore fear, to live in ignorance of a piece of what is our human capacity. I listened to a very interesting podcast this week, which is something I do a lot. It's my favorite medium is this medium, and it's my primary form of entertainment. If I'm listening, I'm definitely listening more often than I'm watching, for sure. I like audio because it has this function to be multifunctional. I can listen to audio whenever I do other things, and I listen to podcasts when I'm driving, and I listen to podcasts when I'm working and I'm cleaning my house. I like learning, and I like listening to people's conversation. I love the interview process, and I've learned so much from listening to interviews from specialists around the world. So one of my favorite podcasts to listen to is the show called Ologies with Ali Ward, and it's fantastic. She's hilarious, and there's so much good information to be had. And basically what she does is she interviews different ologists, like biologists or, you know, herpetologists, or insert whatever tologist you want. And it's this conversation with these people that I find so invigorating. And the episode I listened to most recently was on fearology, which surprisingly is a word, but it's an understudied science, an understudied theory, really. Not a lot of actual, like, strategy has been put towards this idea of fear, especially in places of hyper-functionalized individualism like the United States of America and other countries that are following the same model, you know? So let's picture our being here for just a second, you know? There's four base emotions that we have. We can be happy or sad or mad or scared. And there's fusions of these emotions that can be blended together and that can portray themselves in drastically different ways depending on the set and setting that we may find ourselves in. You could be happy mad too, you know? Like, how dare you fuck with what I got going on? So, this is our base nature. This is who we are. This is how we can express ourselves. And if we compartmentalize what fear is, we've placed it so far away from us, ourselves. If we put it in a box and we hide it away, how sneaky and scary it would appear once it rears its angry head at us for putting it away. You see? My question is, why must we be afraid of fear? And we can be afraid of other people's fear. We can also be afraid of our own fear, our own reaction to the isness. Like, a good conceptology for that would be, you know, vomiting. I think there's even a phobia word for it. You know, like you can have agoraphobia, which is fear of tight spaces, or like one that's in the top of my head is thesmophobia. There's like all kinds of phobias, like these deep, impractical fears. Vomiting can be this deeply uncomfortable physical process to regurgitate some sort of unforeign body or some unacceptable matter. And when I was younger, I was just utterly unable to be able to stomach the idea of vomiting. And I would sit in my room and just stew and hold on to this mass instead of just letting it go. And if I had found out earlier that just being able to let it go would make me feel better, you know, I don't know if you hear that metaphor, because it ranges past just this situation. It could also reveal its opposite. But we can be afraid of the fear. We can be afraid of the uncomfortability. It can be hard to hold our emotions sometimes. And a lot of the negative emotions that occur in our human lives are rooted and seated in fear. Now, I hope that brings you some comfort to understand that your hard feelings are not unique. You have feelings that I do. And even though you might have had trauma that I don't, your response and your reaction to your feelings is very human. And we can speak about it. We can have concessions about it. And there's a spectrum of being and a spectrum of feeling in reality. And every human is unique in their isness and the way that the soul decided to portray itself in this lifetime. But we have these structured Lego things, these buildable constructs of theory in our ideas of feeling. And every single human being in this entire world feels fear. A visceral feeling. It started in the cave people's response to saber-toothed hunters. It started in the weightless feeling of a climber trying to grasp their way through a mountain pass as their finger slips. There is a evolutionary, historical basis in this feeling of fear. And it's important. That's why I'm speaking about it tonight. Because This feeling is what inspires so much distrust and so much conspiracy. It's a maladapted digestion, because the feeling itself is not maladaptive. It's how we decide to work with it. It's how we decide to use it in our society. It's how we decide to use it in our parenting. It is how we have decided to use it in our own self-development. How am I going to decide who I'm going to be tomorrow if I don't digest and use my fear? Now, Jung had all of his archetypes for the different parts of our being that are used to build our inner society. Within a mirrored conceptualization of the world, as a galaxy has all of its arms and all of its independent parts, and a cell has all of its electrons orbiting in a similar path, we can have a dispersion of our being inside our own psyche. Fear itself is an indicator on one front. It can also be a spigot of water and emotionality that has become open. You know, like a water main that just keeps spraying. I read somewhere, I can't remember exactly where, about this piece of our brain called the amygdala. And the amygdala is shaped sort of like an almond. It's very small, about the size of your thumbnail. And whenever something pops up that is startling or distressing in some way, the amygdala becomes aware and says, "Hey, bam, I see you. I gotcha." A spotlight of awareness, norepinephrine and dopamine, a light. And all of a sudden, all we can think about is this distressing matter that has caught our attention. Now, what do you do when your brain has lit up and all you can see is that fear? And then we become ignorant of a lot of other reasons for giving to others, such as compassion, love, and temperance and tolerance. We become blinded to a lot of other essential parts of critical thinking. So, in that same podcast that I was listening to, I heard this very interesting piece that the interviewer and interviewee were discussing. And it was this response that humans have to other people's fear. When somebody is afraid and when somebody is scared and startled and, you know, thrilled, I'm trying. But other people can sense this because of our own empathetic inborn capacity. We have these things called mirror neurons that can replicate other people's isness and other people's conscious. We can step into somebody else's life with love if we want. But when somebody, even like, I guess most aptly a stranger, were to become very afraid and to walk up to you say. If they're super scared and they're hyperventilating and they're red, just picture this person, you know, picture you. It's hard to see ourselves from the outside. We can feel it from the inside, but, you know, a lot of people who are mentally unstable are caught in deep upwellings of fear. And when somebody approaches you frantically, it makes you scared. And a fear response, when you touch a hot pan, you flinch. You take your hand away. You don't want a scar or a callus. You don't want a blister. You don't want the tension that comes from friction with other people. We are all our own flint and whatever the flint hits. So, the instinctual response when somebody comes up to you who's very afraid, at least research says, is to flinch away from it. And I found myself in this routine with people where I've noticed from an early age that when I become afraid, people do want to help me, but my responses have been so outrageous most of my life because I'm very sensitive that when it comes to the point that I need help, I'm incapable of asking for it. We have society with all of its bullshit, but we also have society with its connection. And I lose myself in pessimism sometimes, because when I saw people flinch away from me, I would act more outrageous, as if I was some thrill seeker jumping from the highest cliff. I wished for my fear and my disgust with reality to be transpired onto another, which it would be. I could seriously impact another person's life with my own negativity and my own hurt. But what good that does, really? Do I ever want to hurt anybody else? No. And that's why I'm here. I don't know if you feel my sadness. Another one of those crucial cornerstones of human emotionality. How about ascension? How about becoming more and begetting above ourselves? How about being able to become knowledgeable of this process? Being aware of all of our facets? If we become aware of our feelings, then I think, personally, it'll be a lot less likely that we're going to burn others accidentally, incidentally. That's an idea I've been pushing on this show forever, I feel like. I'm coming pretty close to that magic 3-digit number here. But awareness and mindfulness and presentness can enlighten us. So, I want you to think about that this week. I want you to think about your fear. I want to think about your fear response. Think about how you're afraid of your own fear and how you can be afraid of other people's fear, and how this can hinder our own helpfulness. And if being able to grow as a culture and as a group mind requires group thinking constructively without its mindless edge, then being aware of what we're afraid of, and when our closest other comes up to us and is afraid, maybe we can hold on and stay close to hear them so that we can help them. Otherwise, we might have our own fear response. We can lose our farsightedness, lose our brain in the narrow, tunnel-visioned essence of complete fear shock. Maybe we can give our full self and help and bring them back into our own. Because deep inside all of us, I personally believe, is our connectivity, our soul, our Atman, however, whatever theoretical, philosophical, or physiological system can describe what that is. So, I think that's about it of my yarn. I'm not sure if I accomplished exactly what my goal was here, and maybe I'll approach it again in the future. But I'm grateful I tried. I am very grateful also that you're here, and that you sat with me. I hope that you find some helpful nugget somewhere. Before I leave you, I want to read you a poem of mine that I wrote. I don't do that often here, so if you don't like it, probably won't be another one for a while. And then perhaps a quotation, and then we'll go find O. We'll have him sign you off. Thank you for being you. I've never named one of my poems. Names are difficult, but poetry is something I've done since I was very young. And I recently found an old poem that I'd won in some stupid fucking competition when I was like in my third grade. And my verbosity, my word choice, my inflection, whatever you want to call it, all of it's still pretty much the same as when I was there. And even when I was younger, it was a base of sadness that really sort of inspired my creativity. And I still like to do it when I'm feeling tense and I'm needing to express myself. So, here goes. Is happy fair? When wouldn't it ever? Sharing pale stares stuck in heaven's weather. Do you feel frozen? Lost a piece of you? Deep inside those woes, mistaken, made not true. A fractal beneath everything, nothing, the non-existent, many parts with little stings, but even pain was God-sent. It's all done on purpose, even the silly accident, grace and fullness worth it, happenstance with an incident. I find myself sorry often for my efforts and my breath, but I'm reminded by the coffin that I'm still here and I'm far from death. I thank you for listening. Next, I'm reading from verse 36 in the Tao Te Ching by translator Ursula K. Le Guin and thought provoker Lao Tzu. We see. What seeks to shrink must first have grown. What seeks weakness surely was strong. What seeks its ruin must first have risen. What seeks to take has surely given. This is called the small dark light. The soft, the weak prevail over the hard and the strong. I love the water noises in my apartment complex. But, yeah, sometimes we just have to feel our feelings and let our feelings be and notice our fear and let our fear be and say, yes, life is very difficult, but at least I have the ability to live it. And happily, I'm here living it with you.
Hello, guys. How you doing? I bet you said good. So today, it was my friend's birthday party.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was my friend's.
That's really loud.
Birthday party. But really, it was actually really a fun birthday party. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Are you sure about that?
I think so.
Yeah.
Have a great night. Bye.
Bye.